This is Radio Sputnik.
Broadcasting from Edinburgh, Scotland, you're listening to World in Focus on Radio Sputnik
with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott. It's 4 p.m. in London, 11 a.m. in Washington, Miami and New York, and 6 p.m. in Moscow. This is Radio Sputnik in Edinburgh. Coming up on today's programme, German Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democratic Union scored a stunning victory in the latest regional elections in Germany at the weekend. As her lead continues to grow over the Social Democrats, can her rival stop her from being elected again in the national elections in September? Could Britain be getting a run for its money with regards to how many times voters are sent to the polls? Following two presidential elections last year, Austria could be set to head for the polls yet again for a potential snap parliamentary election which will aim to protect and ensure government stability within the country. Emmanuel Macron was sworn in yesterday as the new French president in a ceremony at the Elysee Palace in Paris. And today he meets with German Chancellor Angela Merkel to try to gain her support for his new vision of a reformed Europe. We'll be asking just what his plans are and how successful they could be. Impeachment proceedings should be started against US President Donald Trump, a prominent US history professor has suggested following Trump's decision to sack the head of the FBI, James Comey. But does the professor's assessment bear close scrutiny when the US Congress and Senate are dominated by his fellow Republicans? And could a fluffy equine therapist help cure your fear of flying? All of that and more over the next hour on this Monday edition of World in Focus. It was supposed to be a stronghold for the German Social Democrat Party, but in one of the heaviest defeats the party has suffered in regional elections, it was Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, and her conservative Christian Democratic Union who stole victory. So with just 4 months to go, is the race to form the next government of Germany a foregone conclusion? Our reporter Mark Hurst has this.
Germany's Social Democrats, the SPD, were given a political thrashing in regional polls on Sunday, deep in their own traditional heartlands. North Rhine-Westphalia is widely seen as a key regional background that can offer a strong indication of how the rest of the country may vote in regional elections due in September. At the start of the year, the SPD were polling neck and neck with German Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democratic Union, the SDU. In January, the SPD, led by the former President of the European Union, Martin Schulz, had been benefiting from a boost referred to as the Schulz effect. But since then, Merkel's CDU have opened up a commanding 10-point lead with their victory in this latest regional election, marking the Social Democrats' third regional defeat of the year, the latest, the worst result in the party's history. The result in North Rhine-Westphalia is also a personal blow for Schulz, as it's his home state and has been held by the Social Democrats since 1966. So does this litmus test victory for Merkel's CDU, which won 33% of the vote, mean September's national elections are all but decided? Well, earlier I spoke with Peter Schulz, Professor of Politics at Georg August University in Göttingen, to get some expert analysis on the latest regional result and its consequences in terms of the race to form the next government of Germany. Professor Schulz, how big a surprise is this result, given the previous speculation at the start of the year that Chancellor Merkel's Christian Democratic Union might struggle at the polls during 2017?
Of course, it comes with a surprise, because nobody would have had expected a rise and a gain of the Christian Democrats of such a volume, and a drop of the Social Democrats basically by 8 percentage points. This is basically kind of a tectonic movement in politics. All the opinion polls showed basically a head-to-head or shoulder-to-shoulder situation shortly before the elections. Then comes suddenly the surprise. Okay, that's politics, and nothing is impossible in politics. It can happen, and if you look at the situation in the United States with Trump and Hillary Clinton, nobody would have predicted such an outcome as well. And we are in a similar situation here in North Rhine-Westphalia. It is not so much connected, I would assume, with the upcoming national parliamentary elections of September this year. It is driven mostly by regional and local concerns of people. And of course, I mean, the national element plays, of course, a role, but I think it is not the decisive factor. The decisive factor in the North Rhine-Westphalia, I would say, is after 7 years of a red-green coalition government, the results are not so magnificent. Just the opposite is basically the case. Modernization has lacked in comparison with other German länder, Bundesländer, and our innovation attracting new industries, new technologies was not really successful. In education, the country is still split, and the government and the opposition were split as well. Shall we move towards a 9-year-old, towards an 8-year higher education in our gymnasium structure, or should we remain with the 9-year? So this, of course, caused confusion with people, especially with families. Then the security situation. I mean, started on New Year's Eve 2015-2016, as you know, in Cologne, and the black card was pushed to Cologne, to the police department there, and then it backfired again on the Minister of Interior in Düsseldorf, and the government in the Länder government. So this was one factor already, which really I think caused concern among the population. If everything is done for safety and security of the people, and then came of course the situation with the bombing attack and the truck attack in Berlin, people were killed, and the attacker, the terrorist, came from North Rhine-Westphalia, and he was known by the police as a potential dangerous person, but the information was not shared with other police departments, other Länder. So it was a kind of cumulative effect of piling up issues and problems, and I think people didn't want to have a continuation of the Red-Green coalition.
Can you see an obvious way back for the Social Democrats now, and do they have enough time to make a comeback, given they have lost 10 points to the CDU since the start of the year?
They lost 10 points since the start of the year, but they gained as well 8 points. If you look at the situation of the Social Democrats in November or December last year, were down to 23, 24, and now then they came up to 32 or whatever, and now they're back again to 27 or 28. So basically, I would say there's a kind of a stabilization of the Social Democratic Party, but and Schulz, Martin Schulz, as a candidate for the Social Democrats, is a person who is trusted by people. But this is not enough. What is missing with the Social Democrats, they don't have a project. I mean, they don't have a project how to modernize, maybe how to heal the rift between in the European Union, how to heal the clavages between the European Union and Germany and Russia, and so forth. So times of instability and concern where nothing is anymore intact and people are seeing the risks on the international scene, they are opting for security and they are opting for what they have and what they know. And here I think the Social Democrats are not offering enough, don't have a project, as I said, and they cannot convince people that they would engage in a better policy.
There appears to be a consensus that Chancellor Merkel has been received well among voters for her position on security, given the SDU is seen to be the strong party on law and order. Given the previous controversy over her immigration policy, are you surprised that opposition parties haven't been able to exploit that more and undermine that perceived strength on security?
They could have done this, and I think the window was open from autumn 2014, basically for 1 year up to autumn or summer 2015, or even to 16 to a certain degree. But then the deal was struck with Turkey, and the figure of an immigrants and asylum seekers from the Arab base, that means Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan, via Turkey dwindled down to about 8,000 or 10,000 a month. This was the safe, basically, Merkel's position. And the new numbers coming over the Mediterranean, not anymore from the North African countries, but basically from Black Sub-Saharan Africa, they are not in the headlines yet. I mean, what is in the headlines are the losses of life when the boats capsized or are sinking. Then, of course, the media is picking it up. But basically, it is not seen as a threat. if this is what increased in volume during the summertime, and there will be probably an increase in volume, then of course it could hurt Merkel's policy. The second point, the Social Democrats in coalition and in government together with the Christian Democrats, they always opted for a more humane asylum and refugee policy. So it was against their principal ideology and understanding of norms and values to opt for a stronger and sharper policy protecting the borders of the European Union. So they couldn't play the card. It was the CSU in Bavaria who played the card, and the results are not yet in. It is difficult. On the one hand side, everybody is afraid of that Germany is losing its identity and it is becoming overcrowded and the security issues are rising, criminality and things like this, and everybody is affected by it. But on the other hand, there is still the history of Germany from the Second World War and from all these nasty mass killings. And aside, they don't want to act alone against the danger and not with militant or administrative means. So it's a kind of a standstill.
Merkel and the CDU weren't the only party celebrating Sunday's result. The Liberal Free Democrats, the FDP, secured a 3% increase from their 2012 result, winning 12.5% in the vote. If they keep up this performance, could Christian Lindner, the party's charismatic leader, prove to be a kingmaker when it comes to forming the next coalition government?
Definitely. I mean, this has been the role of the Liberals all the time in the history of the Bundesrepublik Deutschland, either in the coalition with the Christian Democrats or in a coalition with the Social Democrats. They will do it. I think the results of North Rhine-Westphalia show basically a very small chance for forming a coalition government between the Liberals and the Christian Democrats. They would have 100 seats. That means one seat more than necessary. But of course, no other party would vote and opt together with the AfD. You can take the 7.4% the AfD gained, which is, I think, about 16 seats, can take them out. So the Christian Democrats and the Liberals and the government would have then a majority of about 17 seats. This is enough.
Professor Peter Schulz, Professor of Politics at Georg August University in Göttingen, many thanks for joining us on World in Focus.
Breaking news, expert analysis, and exclusive stories, all in one place. Radio Sputnik. Telling the untold.
Broadcasting from Edinburgh, Scotland, you're listening to World in Focus on Radio Sputnik
with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott. Coming up on the programme, could Britain be getting a run for its money with regards to how many times voters are sent to the polls? Well, following two presidential elections last year, Austria is set to head to the polls yet again for a snap parliamentary election to protect and ensure government stability within the country. We'll have more on that in just a few minutes.
Radio Sputnik.
From June 1st to June 3rd, state officials and decision makers from top Russian and global companies are gathering in St. Petersburg for a one-of-a-kind event. St. Petersburg International Economic Forum 2017 is set to welcome over 12,000 participants from 133 countries. It featured discussions on most pressing issues of today, all under the aegis of its core theme, achieving a new balance on the global stage. Top government figures and leading experts from all around the world are meeting at the biggest platform for international discussion. For more details, head to www.forumspb.com.
Hey, this is Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and muckraker from bradblog.com. Join me for the Bradcast. Every day, right here on Radio Sputnik, we'll have investigative interviews with newsmakers.
We'll call out the liars, frauds, and phonies, and we'll even give kudos to the good guys
when and if we find any. Stories and ideas you won't hear anywhere else. Join me, Brad Friedman, for the Bradcast. Every day, right here on Radio Sputnik.
Tune in to Loud and Clear with Brian Becker for the latest news, commentary, and political analysis. What's really behind the political and social crisis gripping the United States and the world? Forget the spoon-fed soundbites from the pundits who know so little about so much. We bring you independent experts, analysts, and activists. Learn what really makes the decision makers take from the boardrooms of Wall Street to the West Wing of the White House. Here is where the people fighting for change speak and are heard loud and clear. 5 days a week on Radio Sputnik and SputnikNews.com.
Hard Facts is a show that gets to the heart of the matter. We question the mainstream media narrative to get to the truth about world affairs.
I don't think they have a clue what they're doing in Syria.
Basically, it's the sixth attempt by the big powers to overthrow a Middle East government.
Whether it is regime change, masked as revolution, imperialism masked as democracy and human rights. On Hard Facts, we peel back the layers to get to the real story other media doesn't want you to hear.
Absolutely astonishing the British government reacted to this case simply by lying.
Hard Facts.
Radio Sputnik. We speak your language. Find us at SputnikNews.com.
Broadcasting from Edinburgh, Scotland, you're listening to World in Focus on Radio Sputnik
with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott. Welcome back. Still to come on today's programme, could Britain be getting a run for its money with regards to how many times voters are sent to the polls? Well, following two presidential elections last year, Austria could be set to head for the polls yet again for a potential snap parliamentary election to protect and ensure government stability within the country. Emmanuel Macron was sworn in yesterday as the new French president in a ceremony at the Élysée Palace in Paris, and today he meets with the German Chancellor Angela Merkel to try to gain her support for his new vision of a reformed Europe. We'll be asking just what his plans are and how successful they could be. And could a fluffy equine therapist help cure your fear of flying? You're listening to World in Focus on Radio Sputnik. It is 17 minutes past the hour. Following two presidential elections in 2016 alone, the Austrian Chancellor Christian Kern has proposed a snap parliamentary election for later this autumn. Sputnik's Alexander South has more.
Austria will hold a snap parliamentary election this year, the Chancellor Christian Kern has said, as his foreign minister moved to take control of the main Conservative Party in the country's fractured coalition. An election would give the far-right Freedom Party a good chance of entering the national government, less than a year after its candidate lost a close-fought presidential runoff. Joined with me now to discuss the story is Alison Fidler, Professor of Austrian and German Studies at Lancaster University. Hello, Alison.
Hello there.
So, firstly, can you describe the current climate in Austria, both politically and socially?
Like some countries, Austria has, I think, had to undergo quite a few elections in the course of last year. And so there is some sort of voter fatigue, I would say, or at least the sense that, in 2016, there were four goes at appointing a president of the country. So it can't but have an impact on how people feel. Nevertheless, that concluded clearly in favour of the former Green Party member Alexander van der Bellen in December last year. And things have moved on, I suppose, and settled down a bit until now.
OK, and how does this atmosphere in Austria, how does this relate to other European countries and perhaps the EU?
In the course of the presidential election last year, I think that that background was very tangible in that van der Bellen, we should move away from him in a minute, but his campaign was certainly boosted by going forward on the platform of a vote for him would be for the reputation, the good reputation of Austria. So that was with the Brexit decision in mind and, of course, to some extent, the Trump effect, if you like. So these things are certainly part of the makeup of Austria. It's a small country, but it's a country with multiple borders and one that is very much dependent on international trade and relations with very many countries.
With relation to this story, obviously, this is only speculative. We don't know when this election will take place, but how likely is it that a snap election will bolster and strengthen the far-right Freedom Party, which did so well last election?
The possible snap election is, it's being talked about, and as you pointed out, the resignation from the Austrian People's Party of Mitalina has left this vacuum, now being filled by Sebastian Kurz, very up-and-coming, forthright, and I think quite media-savvy sort of politician, Sebastian Kurz, who has said, you know, that he's not happy with restarts all the time and just, you know, just taking over from somebody else, and that a new election would give the coalition the platform it needs to move on. I mean, that said, Van der Bellen will be taking quite a calm hand, I think, in steering this and making sure due process is gone through. So they would have to have a two-thirds majority, I think it is, to obtain this new election earlier than is planned. That it would have been 2018. So to hold it this year, it will have to go through the due process. However, it's gaining currency. It's being talked about in the media already. I think the probability that there will be an election in the autumn is now quite high. I don't know how snap that is, but I think it may come outside of the normal schedule, which would have been 2018. Now, the effect this could have remains to be seen. It's certainly true that the Freedom Party, this is the far-right party that, as you rightly pointed out, had its candidate very close run to the successful president. They are extremely keen to have a new election, so they must have good grounds for thinking that this will play to their strengths.
If we see the Freedom Party being highly successful in this snap election, what would a rightward shift, both politically and socially, mean for Austria?
We've seen it before, certainly, and in fairly recent history, with the meteoric rise in the fortunes of the Freedom Party under Jörg Haider, 1999-2000. That coalition then, you know, in various forms, rumbled on for many years, and as you may or may not know, had protests against it internationally, certainly from the EU. There were sanctions placed, quite short-lived. I think things have changed slightly since then. We're seeing the popularity in right-wing movements, in populist movements across Europe and beyond. And the likelihood, therefore, is that, you know, this move to the right, if you like, is not seen as quite such a dangerous thing as it had been, what, just a little over 15 years ago.
Moving on more to the elements of the story, are the Conservatives afraid of the outcome of a snap election?
I don't think so. Austria, of course, is generally run by coalition governments. It's the system, if you like. And the ÖVP, this Austrian Freedom Party, are the more likely of the parties to wish to obtain a coalition or use the Freedom Party to form a coalition. They have done, as I said, in 1999, 2000, and after that as well. The new thing is that the Socialist Party, the Socialist Democrat Party in Austria, has also got coalition signs with the Blue Party, the Freedom Party. They are in coalitions regionally in Austria. So they too are not ruling out, it would seem, the possibility of a coalition government at national level. I think the only people who are strongly saying, not on our watch, we will not do this, is the Green Party. Eva Glavishnik has said, you know, we're the only ones making it very clear that we are not going to be supporting this sort of move to the right.
Professor Alison Fidler, Professor of Austrian and German Studies at Lancaster University, thank you for speaking today on World in Focus.
You're welcome.
Alexander South, Sputnik News, signing off.
Tough questions are the most powerful weapon we have. As long as you have questions, we'll keep asking. Radio Sputnik, telling the untold.
Monsieur le Président de la République.
The new French President, le Président de la République, Emmanuel Macron, was sworn in yesterday, and at the ceremony at the Élysée Palace in Paris, President Macron said he would give the French their self-confidence back.
Or, depuis des décennies, la France doute d'elle-même.
For decades, France has doubted itself. It feels threatened in its culture, its social model, its profound beliefs. It doubts where it is coming from. This is why my mandate will be guided by two imperatives. The first one will be to give the French their self-confidence back.
But before we look at the new president's plans and the task that lies ahead, let's rewind 5 years to this moment. A similar ceremony 5 years ago saw the swearing-in of François Hollande back in May 2012.
Monsieur le Président de la République.
Hollande was crowned France's first socialist president in 17 years after beating conservative incumbent Nicolas Sarkozy in a runoff ballot on May 6, 2012. The new president campaigned on the twin promises of change now and a normal administration, signalling a break from the flashy style that had made Sarkozy the least popular French president in modern history until that point. And although the socialist leader brought a wave of enthusiasm and hope, it seemed a little short-lived. Sergi Raffi, the author of a best-selling biography of President Hollande, said, quote, "He won the election in 2012 more as a result of French voters' dislike of Nicolas Sarkozy and less because of his own appeal. He therefore came to power with virtually no grace period," end quote. At the time, his biggest battles were expected to be related to France's financial stability. In his own inauguration speech, Hollande stated that he was fully aware of the challenges facing France, including the debt crisis and weak growth. But only 1 month into his presidency, the First Lady enraged the Socialist Party, turning against Hollande's former partner's campaign to be elected to Parliament, tweeting her support for Ségolène Royal's rival in the party. Then, in March 2013, Jérôme Cahuzac, the man Hollande picked to fix the country's finances, was forced to step down over the revelation that he had hid €600,000 in Switzerland to avoid paying taxes. But these were overshadowed by the revelations exposed by a French tabloid of Hollande's love affair with French actress Julie Gayet. The First Lady was hospitalised after a suspected near overdose and later wrote a bitter tell-all about the president following their breakup. The president did manage to rise above the scandal to some extent. He came good on his promise to legalise equal marriage, battling the conservative right and religious bodies. He claimed victories in military campaigns and interventions in Mali and the Central African Republic. But then came a series of incidents that would undoubtedly shape Hollande's presidency. With Hollande's approval rating at a low of 13%, he was given the chance to show himself as a true leader as France suffered a series of devastating and unprecedented terror attacks. On the 7th of January 2015, at around 11:30 a.m. local time, two brothers forced their way into the offices of the French satirical weekly newspaper Charlie Hebdo in Paris. Armed with assault rifles and other weapons, they killed 12 people and injured 11 others. The gunmen identified themselves as belonging to the Islamist terrorist group Al-Qaeda's branch in Yemen, which took responsibility for the attack. In related attacks, a third man killed a policewoman and four clients in a kosher supermarket. In the days that followed, the French government organised a massive March for Peace in Paris, rallying 1.5 million people, including 44 world leaders. But France was hit again just 10 months later. The November 2015 Paris attacks were a series of coordinated terrorist attacks that occurred on Friday the 13th of November 2015 in Paris and the northern suburb of the city. Beginning just after 9 p.m. local time, three suicide bombers struck outside the Stade de France in Saint-Denis during a football match. This was followed by a series of mass shootings and a suicide bombing at cafes and restaurants. Gunmen carried out another mass shooting and took hostages at an Eagles of Death Metal concert at the Bataclan Theatre, leading to a standoff with the police. The attackers were shot or blew themselves up when police raided the theatre. The attackers killed 130 people, including 89 at the Bataclan Theatre, and another 368 were injured, almost 100 seriously. Seven of the attackers also died. The attacks were the deadliest on French soil since World War II and the deadliest in the European Union since the Madrid train bombings of 2004. Daesh claimed responsibility for the attacks, saying it was a retaliation for the French airstrikes on ISIL targets in Syria and Iraq. President François Hollande said the attacks were an act of war by Daesh. In a televised speech that evening, Hollande declared a state of emergency throughout France and ordered borders to be shut. He pledged to defeat the terrorists, but also called on citizens to, quote, show compassion and solidarity, unity and calm, end quote. Many complimented Hollande for his handling of the attacks, some suggesting that he had shown what it meant to be a great leader, and his approval ratings did begin to climb back up. But his actions following the attacks lost him the support of many within his own party when he ordered the deployment of 10,000 troops across France and moved to change the constitution in order to strip dual citizens found guilty of terrorism of French nationality. The bill he proposed was deemed by many within his party to not even be legal and to be against the principles of equality. Despite his reaction to the terror attacks, Hollande could never quite win over the French public. As Hollande himself once declared, his real enemy would be the world of finance. And it is his record on financial matters that lost him the faith of the French public and fellow lawmakers more than any other area. A series of tax breaks for businesses led to widespread violent protests, and coupled with high unemployment figures, ultimately, in the run-up to this year's election, Hollande had conceded that he could not run again as a socialist candidate. But Hollande's legacy undoubtedly impacted upon the Socialist Party itself, with their presidential candidate Benoît Hamon unable to make it to the second round of voting, and several high-profile socialist supporters and members giving their backing to Emmanuel Macron, which brings us back to yesterday's inauguration. Macron's young centrist movement En Marche, now rebranded for the legislative elections next month as La République En Marche, will finalise candidates for the legislative elections and pick a prime minister. But in his speech yesterday, the new president made clear his own priorities for presidency. The former investment banker, who had never stood in an election before now, has vowed to shake up the country's political order and reinvigorate its economy. And one key part of this shake-up seems to be the European Union. Macron is an unashamed Europhile who walked on stage outside the Louvre in Paris to deliver his first speech as president-elect, with the European anthem Ode to Joy playing in the background. But in yesterday's speech, he spoke of the need to reform and relaunch the European Union. And today, Macron is meeting with the German Chancellor Angela Merkel to urge her to back his plans for the 28-member bloc. And joining me to discuss those plans in more detail now is our man in London, Jim Ensom. Jim, first things first, can you bring us up to speed on what Macron's plans are?
Well, he's quite a fascinating person. As you well know, he was finance minister under François, as you mentioned earlier, under François Hollande. And then he left a year ago to set up his own party, En Marche. Now, the interesting thing about the presidential election is it's the first time that I can remember that there's never been a second runoff between the Republicans and the Socialists. It was between Marine Le Pen from the Front National and En Marche, this brand new party. And he wants to put his stamp on it, saying, you know, vive la République and all of that. But he said in his inaugural speech, we will reform and relaunch the Europe we need because it protects us and allows us to demonstrate our values to the world. But he is making a big, big kick of France's right to have its own sovereignty, to make France proud of itself again, while also influencing Europe. So his meeting with Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, is going to be rather fascinating, because it does suggest that the Paris-Berlin axis has been under a little bit of strain, and he wants to reset it. And that's where I think he's going on this one.
Mm-hmm. And how are his plans likely to be received by Merkel and indeed the other EU member states?
It's not easy. Merkel is going to be buoyed by the fact that the Nordrhein-Westphalia election, which happened yesterday, gave her third consecutive regional win. Obviously, she was standing against the SPD's Martin Schulz, who resigned as the president of the European Union. He's actually failed to win the last three regional elections. This looks like a shoo-in to Merkel's fourth. So it looks like she's doing quite well. But on the other hand, she is facing problems from other Eurozone countries. And Macron, being the ex-finance minister, and he's an economist himself, he has some sympathy towards the southern European Eurozone states, those in the single currency. He's got some sympathy for their antipathy towards the German grip on the Eurozone. And of course, Germany has a veto on the ECB over bailouts, etc. So he has some sympathy. So I think he wants to renegotiate and reset the way France acts. And I think he actually wants to increase France's solidarity with the rest of Europe, but also its grip on power and take it away a little bit from Berlin.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think Macron's influence might play into the hands of other nations?
Well, he's actually said that there could be a two-speed Europe. Now, this is going to be rather interesting. He is pro-Europe. And remember, he's just immediately today, he's appointed Republican Edouard Philippe as the country's new prime minister, which is rather fascinating. So he's trying to keep the Republicans in or split the Republicans. So he's doing a very, very clever piece of work at home, while also, I think, playing into the southern Eurozones. And I also think he's going to make mention of Poland and Hungary. They're at loggerheads at the moment. both of both countries are at loggerheads over the rule of law, because Poland changed rules over its constitution. Hungary has been making legislation which has affected human rights and the Central European University. That whole debacle is still continuing. And I think he's calling for a stronger Europe within the Eurozone, but he's suggesting there could be a new framework for Europe. So I would love to be a fly on the wall right now this minute as Merkel meets Macron.
And some already suggest that there is a two-speed Eurozone, with the Eastern European countries being treated differently to those in the Eurozone themselves and the members of the Euro. Now, could this become more formal then going forward?
I'm suspicious that that's exactly what he is going to suggest. Now, obviously, we have to wait to September the 24th when the German federal election takes place, but because we need to see exactly the way that pans out. But obviously, you know, Martin Schulz, having lost the Nordrhein-Westphalia election yesterday, is going to be quite an influence on that one. But Macron wants to put his stamp on things, and I think he can see a new European agenda. Yes, a reformed EU. He did actually say a revitalized EU, a strong EU, but where France plays a central role. I think we're in for very, very interesting times ahead.
And with Britain leaving the European Union, it's possible that Macron might try and make a bit of a power grab to at least be on level with Germany, do you think?
That's very much where I think he's going, although I don't entirely rule out the possibility that he may actually play a very much more formal role. You've got to know that Bernier, who's the chief negotiator for the Commission, he's a former French minister. So Barnier, Michel Barnier, who will be leading that role in the Brexit negotiations, I think that there will be quite an interesting little background mix going on there in terms of British exit from the EU. I think we just have to stand back and wait and see, because a week is a long time in politics and we've got months and months of this to run.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much, Jim Ensom. Our man in London, Jim Ensom, there. And we'll finish this report listening to the final words of Emmanuel Macron at yesterday's inauguration speech.
Je sais que les Françaises et les Français en cette heure.
I know at this time that French women and French men are expecting a lot from me. I'm well aware of that. Personally, tonight, I will be at work.
Vive la République. Vive la France.
Radio Sputnik. We speak your language. Find us at sputniknews.com.
Broadcasting from Edinburgh, Scotland, you're listening to World in Focus on Radio Sputnik
with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott. Coming up on the programme, impeachment proceedings should be started against US President Donald Trump, a prominent US history professor has suggested, following Trump's decision to sack the head of the FBI, James Comey. But does the professor's assessment bear close scrutiny when the US Congress and Senate are dominated by his fellow Republicans? We'll have more on that in just a few minutes.
This is Radio Sputnik.
All right, we'll do one together. You ready? You ready? Max and Stacey together having oral sex. Here we go. 3, 2. Hi, Stacey.
Double down, double down.
I'm doubling down with you, baby.
Double down.
We got a new show on Sputnik.
It's markets, finance, business, economics, ka-ching, bling, and
all kinds of good stuff. Only on Sputnik with Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert. Doubling down.
Into Loud and Clear with Brian Becker for the latest news, commentary, and political analysis. What's really behind the political and social crisis gripping the United States and the world? Forget the spoon-fed soundbites from the pundits who know so little about so much. We bring you independent experts, analysts, and activists. Learn what really makes the decision-makers take from the boardrooms of Wall Street to the West Wing of the White House. Here is where the people fighting for change speak and are heard loud and clear. 5 days a week on Radio Sputnik and SputnikNews.com.
Tom Hartmann.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
oddly enough, it's not nonfiction books that seem to animate the right. It's novels, because this vision of America that comes out of the right is something that you have to make up. You know, it's not like you could write a book saying, oh, here's a right-wing country that works really well. Let's emulate them.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Radio Sputnik.
Want to talk? Get in touch with us at radio@sputniknews.com.
This is Radio Sputnik.
Broadcasting from Edinburgh, Scotland, you're listening to World in Focus on Radio Sputnik.
With Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott. Welcome back. Still to come on today's programme, impeachment proceedings should be started against US President Donald Trump, a prominent US history professor has suggested, following Trump's decision to sack the head of the FBI, James Comey. But does the professor's assessment bear close scrutiny when the US Congress and Senate are dominated by his fellow Republicans? And could a fluffy equine therapist help cure your fear of flying? You're listening to World in Focus on Radio Sputnik. It is 40 minutes past the hour. An impeachment investigation should be started against US President Donald Trump. That's according to a prominent American academic who has closely monitored the history of US presidents for more than four decades. So does this assessment stand up to close scrutiny? Well, our reporter Mark Hurst has this report.
Alan Lichtman, a US professor of history, who has successfully predicted the result of every presidential election race since 1984, has suggested there are enough grounds to bring an impeachment investigation against President Donald Trump over his sacking of former FBI Director James Comey. Lichtman told Newsweek magazine that the decision by President Trump was more serious than Watergate, the investigation that led to the resignation of Richard Nixon in 1974. Critics of Lichtman have suggested the timing of his comments are linked to a new book he has just published. But given his track record in correctly predicting presidential races since the 1980s, will his latest prediction be fulfilled? Earlier I spoke with Musa Al-Gharbi, a senior fellow with the Southwest Initiative for the Study of Middle East Conflicts. Musa Al-Gharbi, as you've heard, Professor Lichtman has warned that President Trump's decision to fire the head of the FBI, James Comey, is more serious than Watergate. What's your assessment?
Yes, I see two problems with Lichtman's thesis. The first one is that Lichtman predicted Trump's victory, as did I, but he predicted Trump's victory using this model he developed called the 13 Keys. That model doesn't speak at all to impeachment. So a lot of people, when they talk about how Lichtman predicted Trump and all the presidents since 1984, and now he's saying Trump is going to be impeached, you should take that with a grain of salt, because the model he used to predict the presidents who got elected has nothing to do with his claim that Trump is going to be impeached. Mm-hmm. That's just his gut. But the prospect of Trump being impeached, to my mind, is just pure fantasy. It's a basic math problem. In order to impeach the president of the United States, you need a majority in the House. And then to actually remove him from office, you need a two-thirds majority vote in the Senate. And there's no prospect in which the Democrats could achieve either of those things in 2018, which means they'll be in office at least through 2020, and he'll probably win for the reasons I explained in my recent article. So if Trump were to be impeached, it would be sometime in his second term, mm-hmm. Which would be around 2022 or something. But that's a bit later than I think most people would be hoping.
Lichtman has been quite careful in his use of language, using phrases like arguably Trump could be impeached, and not suggesting that the president should be impeached now, but that an investigation should be started. Do you think Lichtman has a political agenda?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's, I think both. I think he is selling a new book, and that the kind of claim that he made there certainly has made a splash, and we'll probably sell some copies, and good for him. But in terms of will Trump be impeached, I think it's highly implausible. I mean, Clinton was impeached because the Republicans controlled both chambers of Congress. Nixon was able to be impeached, and Clinton's case, he was impeached in the House, but the Senate actually couldn't push him out because the Republicans only had 55 seats. There's no scenario in which Democrats would even have 55 seats, let alone 66. But then Nixon was able to face impeachment. He wasn't actually impeached, but they were able to threaten him with impeachment because the Democrats, the opposition party, controlled both chambers of Congress once again. Again, the Democrats don't control either chamber of Congress, and they're not going to for years.
In political terms, is it fair, in your assessment, to suggest that for the duration of his presidency, Trump is effectively untouchable? And if so, does that not bring with it risks that he will make a decision that might have catastrophic consequences for the United States?
Absolutely. I mean, so, yeah, Trump is basically untouchable so long as most of the other Republicans don't turn on him. And that does give him a certain freedom to make decisions that could be indeed disastrous. One would hope that if he started going down that road, that eventually some of his own party would turn on him and would maybe make it easier to push him out. But I'm not exactly going to hold my breath for that.
And regardless of the way in which President Trump dismissed Comey, will this whole episode not simply serve to undermine the perceived credibility and independence of the FBI and seriously weaken the effectiveness of that organization?
Yes. I mean, I think it is a problem. I mean, unfortunately, you know, both parties have been in some sense stung by the FBI recently and have sort of turned on the FBI in their own ways. I mean, the Democrats have been casting the FBI as a partisan organization all the way up through the time that Trump has been elected. And now that Trump is facing blowback from his decision to fire Comey, he and a number of other Republicans are also disparaging the FBI. So this is a very low point for the Bureau, and I think it definitely does undermine there.
Musa Al-Gharbi, many thanks for that. Well, I'm now joined by Ewan Morgan, Professor of United States Studies at the University College London. Professor Morgan, many thanks for speaking to us today on World in Focus. Donald Trump seems to stumble from one crisis or row to the next with no obvious indication any of these events are damaging him. Realistically, there is little chance the Republicans will turn against him and seek an impeachment, is there?
Hardly any. Everybody makes a comparison with Watergate, which was an entirely different issue, stemming from a breaking into Democratic headquarters by political operatives secretly connected to the Nixon White House. Now, there was evidence linking the White House to the burglars. There was a conspiracy caught on the White House tapes to obstruct justice. And eventually there were whistleblowers in the Nixon administration who came clean about the president's guilt. So, you know, those factors are just not present in the current situation. I think it's a very serious thing that Trump has done, but unless we have smoking guns and whistleblowers to spill the beans, I think he's fairly safe. And very importantly, of course, two presidents in the past have undergone impeachment. None was formally impeached, but had to go through impeachment trial. And, of course, it was Richard Nixon who resigned to escape impeachment. And in all three instances, the president was of a different party to the one that controlled both houses of Congress. So the partisan link isn't there. The Republicans aren't going to shoot themselves in the foot by investigating a president of their own party. It could change if there is some significant revelation, or if the Democrats gain control of the House of Representatives in the 2018 midterm elections. But for the moment, the latter is a long shot.
President Trump, in addition to this row with the head of the FBI, has also fallen out with America's intelligence services. How much of this is damaging to these public organizations, and to what extent does it undermine their work?
Well, it's very significant. I can't think of a president who's had such a tempestuous relationship with America's security services. And this is a particularly difficult time, of course, because we're living in a permanent age of terror threats. You know, if you go back to the Cold War, when there was a virtually permanent Soviet threat, the president and the security services may not have been bosom buddies, but there was no evidence of such fractiousness between them as exists today. Mm-hmm. Trump's really rewriting the script for presidential politics. You know, he does things, tweets, public statements of other kinds, and laying himself on the line with these spectacular eruptions. And, you know, people who spent their life studying the presidency, like myself, you know, he's breaking every rule in the book, but he's getting away with it because, I think, the people who voted for him to become president, most of them wanted somebody who was not part of the political establishment, who didn't talk the talk of the political elites, who held the political establishment in open contempt in the way that they do, and Trump is delivering for them. And I think that base will remain faithful to him until or if some really serious revelation of misdemeanor occurs.
Regardless of the spin put on it following Trump's decision to sack Comey, it does seem like he more or less made this decision himself. Which individuals around President Trump does he listen to when it comes to really important decisions like this? And is there any indication he cares how his decisions will be reported or perceived?
Well, there are a number of people competing for the president's ear. One faction of populists in the White House who want a closer relationship with Russia and believe that the United States should work hand in hand with it in the Middle East and elsewhere. They may have had some influence. The only problem with that scenario is that the leader of this group, Steve Bannon, his influence has been in decline, and analysts are suggesting that the rising influence in the Trump White House is Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Trump's daughter, Ivanka. Now, I can't see them advising this kind of strategy. They're somewhat more moderate in their approach. So I think that Trump took it on himself. I don't think he appreciates being hounded, or as he saw it, being hounded by the director of the FBI. And he just decided that he was going to get the monkey off his back in this rather untoward manner. The only previous FBI sacking, which was by President Clinton, had some justification concerning incompetence and missteps by the FBI director. Comey, I think that his conduct in the 2016 election left much to be desired, but if that was the cause for sacking him, he should have been sacked on day one of the Trump presidency, not 4 months in.
Professor Ewan Morgan, many thanks for joining us today on World in Focus.
This is Radio Sputnik.
Finally, many of us have a slight fear of flying. For some, it can be rather severe, and endless therapies have been suggested to help those that suffer overcome their fear of flying. But now, a Cincinnati area airport has employed the help of some equine therapists. That's right, they've brought in miniature horses to provide support to nervous travellers. The tiny therapy horses greet passengers at the ticketing area, it being too difficult to herd them through security. They come from a nearby non-profit farm that runs a volunteer miniature horse therapy programme. They're apparently trained to handle the bustling environment, so don't get scared or try to run away. Travellers are allowed to pose for photos, and according to a press release, the horses provide, quote, mobile therapeutic services to children and adults through equine-assisted activities, end quote. Apparently, there are other therapy animals used at airports. 30 US airports now have therapy dogs, and some have other animals, such as cats and even a pot-bellied pig. Well, that's all we have time for this edition of World in Focus. Don't forget you can listen again to this and previous shows at sputniknews.com/radio. This is Radio Sputnik in Edinburgh. In just a moment, we hand over to Washington, D.C. for the Tom Hartmann Show. Until tomorrow, from me, Carolyn Scott, goodbye.
We are talking
24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
You are listening.
We give you the most essential out of the endless information space.
Radio Sputnik, telling the untold.
From June 1st to June 3rd, political leaders, top experts, and prominent businessmen from all across the globe are meeting at St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. Join them in discussion on relevant topics concerning new economic reality, geopolitics to cybersecurity, roughly 100 business events, roundtables and discussions, business breakfasts, and insightful lectures, all this and more at SPIEF 2017. Don't miss out. More details on forumsbb.com.
Mainstream news coverage catches the big moments.
60 people confirmed dead.
Brexit means Brexit.
We will make America great again.
But what about the stories behind the stories?
The untold stories hidden beneath the mainstream.
Several hundred guys on voluntary starvation.
Intelligence agencies cannot admit they make a mistake.
If they tell me back, I will kill myself.
Sputnik's daily global current affairs programme, World in Focus, with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott.
Join us live from Sputnik Studios in Edinburgh, Scotland, every weekday from 4pm in the UK, 11am Eastern Standard Time and 7 o'clock in Moscow.
Hi, this is Max Kaiser for Double Down. New show on Sputnik with Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert. Everybody's doubling down. Central bankers are doubling down. Gambleaholics are doubling down. Everyone's doubling down. Why don't you double down? Right here at Sputnik with a new show called Double Down with Max and Stacey. Bye, y'all.
By Any Means Necessary is your guide to the movement and efforts shaping the world around us, from mass incarceration.
No longer am I interested in or concerned with prison reform. I am interested only in the eradication of prisons.
To the battle between police and water protectors.
It was a pretty punishing disregard for the sanctity of human life that unleashing water cannons on peaceful, prayerful water protectors.
From efforts to protect the environment.
The climate movement is ready to, with plenty of opposition research and force and strength, along with, you know, the right of both science and morality to fight them on this.
To the movement for Black Lives.
When I first saw the Michael Brown video and I saw that it clearly contradicted the narrative put forth by the Ferguson Police Department and by police supporters in general, three words came to mind. Color me shocked.
Stay tuned to By Any Means Necessary, 5 days a week here on Radio Sputnik.
Hard Facts is a show that gets to the heart of the matter. We question the mainstream media narrative to get to the truth about world affairs.
I don't think they have a clue what they're doing in Syria.
Basically, it's the sixth attempt by the big powers to overthrow a Middle East government.
Whether it is regime change, masked as revolution, imperialism masked as democracy and human rights. On Hard Facts, we peel back the layers to get to the real story other media doesn't want you to hear.
Absolutely astonishing the British government reacted to this case simply by lying.
Hard Facts.
Capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Ray Bradbury, the author of Fahrenheit 451, once wrote, "If you don't want a man unhappy politically, don't give him two sides to a question to worry him. Give him one, better yet, give him none. Let him forget there's such a thing as war." Level Talk program has been devised to offer two sides to any argument. We don't want to make up your mind for you, but we do want to be sure that you know both sides of any story. Tune in to Level Talk.
Catch all the breaking global political and economic news as it happens. Sputnik brings an all-star lineup with expert opinion from some of the biggest names in the news today. Noam Chomsky.
Turkey, U.S. ally, their main goal is to attack the Kurds, the one ground force opposing ISIS. And there have been a kind of a funnel for support of ISIS, not officially, but in practice.
Peter Sunde, co-founder of the Pirate Bay.
We don't have any sort of democratic control over the internet. And I think that we're very naive when we think that the internet itself is intrinsically good. It's not. It's just a very neutral technology that is being used for good things, but more and more being used for evil things.
Icelandic Foreign Minister Gunnar Bragi Sveinsson.
Increased activities in Keflavik Air Base, and that has to do with more activities from the Russian Northern Fleet in the ocean around Iceland, and also, of course, these usual flights of the bombers.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
We're the ones that destroyed the government of Libya. We're the ones that, in a pipeline dispute, that helped destroy the government of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. We're the ones who invaded Iraq.
Former U.S. Secretary of Defense William Perry.
The hostile relationship between the United States and Russia today is dangerous for both countries, not because either country would actually want to start a military conflict, but because there's always a danger of blundering.
Sputnik talks to the brightest minds in politics and current affairs to find out what's really happening. Tune in.